You're listening to the Dow for All Seasons with the one and only Coupon, NDB Media Sports.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this place called Vertigo, otherwise known as the Yell for All Seasons podcast here on the NDB Media Sports Channel, Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Taryn the Coop Cooper, your Yell for All Seasons. What's going on, everyone? It's Wednesday evening, February 20th. I'd like to wish a very happy birthday to my mother, although she has no idea how to access my podcast, and she thinks I talk crazy when I talk about my podcast. But I have a few announcements to make. Our usual Whoop, There It Is, Jake segment is on hiatus for at least another week. Jake had some family issues to attend to last week, and then this week something else popped up, and he will need to travel. He may be able to dial in to say hello later, but the segment is closed for this week. Best wishes to my friend and partner in crime, Jake Stevens, with his family this week. And I'm just going to cut right to the chase. I have a very special guest tonight, somebody I consider a very dear friend of mine, somebody that I've been friends with, quote-unquote, on Twitter and friends with in real life, not quote-unquote, for about 2 years now. Tonight we're tackling a topic that I rarely discuss. I really have no allegiance to. We'll be discussing Knicks basketball, and luckily for me and you, dear audience, we have a Knicks expert to discuss that hot topic. He is currently an editor over at SNY's Knicks blog and one of the head nuts over at a site I'm proud to contribute as the travel reporter, the dailystash.net. Please help me welcome my dear friend, Matt Falkenberry. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Taryn. How are you doing?
Oh, I am well. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm glad that you were able to make it. I'm just sorry we haven't done this sooner. And so before getting into the nitty-gritty, you know, you and I have known each other for about 2 years. We're, you know, both passionate Mets fans, and you are also the editor over at the Knicks blog. But, you know, give the audience who might not know you a little bit of insight and background as to how you became a blogger and writing about sports, and then we'll expand from there.
Okay. I'll try to keep it as sweet as possible. Starting when I was at Oneonta State in my junior year, I started dabbling with blogging with a friend of mine named Michael Gansey, who is my co-owner over at the Daily Stash. And we, tried to find a niche of what we wanted to do. And after a couple of years of kind of going through different phases, whether it was all sports, we even had the Daily Stash at one point, wrote about the Rangers. And eventually we settled on the Mets because that was our passion, was baseball. So we were writing about the Mets, and the day we started the Stash was actually in March of 2008. So this year we're celebrating our fifth anniversary. We'll have a whole logo and everything else. So I started doing that with the Mets, and been with doing that for a while, getting involved, going to the blogger days and that the Mets provide and things like that, going to different games and whatnot. And then when it came to basketball, this past year, SNY asked Mets Blog, Matt Cerrone, who runs not only Mets Blog, but is actually runs the blog network, opened up opportunities for people to send in their names and resumes to contribute to the site. He emailed me back and asked me if I wanted to write about the Knicks. I was actually surprised at first because obviously with my Mets background, I'm getting called up for the majors and I'm write for Mets blog, but he asked me to do the Knicks, and I said to myself, well, people are going to know me for the Mets, but I am a Knicks fan. I've been a Knicks fan since '96. I was a Knicks and Jets fan first before the Rangers and the Mets came into my life. So I love basketball. I watch their games, and I figured, why not? Let's give it a try. And it's been a great thing since, and been with them now since October. And I do their pre- and post-game stuff. And I do a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, editing, scheduling out posts and things like that. And that's how I got involved with the Knicks. And, of course, in the meantime, I try to keep my hat in the ring as much as I can with the Mets. And also you can follow me on Twitter at Daily Stash. And I do a lot of my stuff on there, too, talking with fans, giving out my own opinions, trying to be as funny as humanly possible, although there are plenty of comedians on Twitter for sure.
that is very true. And some of your Back to You Gare and all those Twitter hashtags. We've definitely had some laughs, and I think that's why, you know, you and I became such good friends too. But I think it's really fascinating. I'd like to start off talking about the Knicks, because that's something that my audience really doesn't get to hear a lot about, is we really don't talk about basketball that much. And, it's my personal bias. You know, I often say it's my show, my rules. But you know what? I'm always open to hear about it. I often think that, you know, when Madison Square Garden is rocking and rolling with their two sports, you know, the two major sports teams, the Knicks and the Rangers, the city is just that much better. So why don't we talk a little bit about, you know, what you're doing for Knicks Blog, and talk a little bit more in depth about the team, which, you know, again, so not my milieu, so just really shining the spotlight on you. But, you know, do you get to go to games your background with SNY's Knicks Blog?
I've been to practices because they actually practice, roughly 5 minutes from my home. So that's pretty cool. Going to practice, I've interviewed Mike Woodson, Mari Spottermeyer, Carmelo Anthony, you know, in a group media setting. And I do it for Adam Zagoria, who writes for NBA.com, and he has his own website on SNY. And I've been only able to cover one game. I went to see the Knicks play the Pistons Monday before the All-Star break. They won the game, and that was a thrill, that, you know, to be able to kind of go behind the scenes. I mean, to be inside the Garden when it's empty, to be literally on the floor, the whole building's just quiet except for some of the players practicing and such. That was really a thrill. So I've gotten to do some stuff. I think the greatest thing about working for SNY and the Knicks Blog is the interaction with the fans. You know, you get so many people that come to the site every day. You get a lot of people who are so passionate about the team. I try to read all the comments on something that maybe I've written, or the other two guys, Brian Demena and Tommy D, who is the editor-in-chief of the website. And we all, you know, try to, you know, just bring the best information that we can for the Knicks Blog. And it was actually, there was a book that Alan Hahn, who used to cover the Islanders for Newsday, and now he covers the Knicks for MSG, and he used to cover the Knicks for Newsday too. He wrote a book, The 100 Things You Should Do and Know About the Knicks Before You Die. And at the very end, he talks about blogs, and he mentions the Knicks Blog specifically. It's one of the blogs that people should go to, you know, and it's more on the basis of the coaching aspect and more of the breakdowns of plays or certain parts of the game. And that really hit a chord with me, because as someone who's new to it all, that there is such an importance with this site among some of the other Knicks blogs out there, like Posting and Toasting, like knickerblogger.net, that, you know, have a niche. And, you know, the Knicks blog circle is not as big as the Mets, and at least not as far as I'm aware. Again, I'm still getting used to it all. But there are a lot of passionate fans out there who have seen this team go through a lot harder times than I think many of the other sports teams in this area recently. Mm-hmm. And so now that the team is starting to win again and win consistently, you know, the excitement is back, and the passion, I think, is ratcheted up to a new level now that the Isaiah era has finally been cleared out completely, and we're staring at, you know, a brand new team with a front office and a coach that people are really behind for the most part.
Well, you know, you bring up a very interesting topic, because while I don't follow the Knicks as in-depth as someone like you, you know, who follows the team basically for a living, they do own, you know, the back pages of New York, and being a sports fan, I do have a working knowledge of, you know, what's going on with the team. But, you know, the NBA just had their All-Star game. The Knicks are in first place in the Atlantic Division, and they're second overall in the East. And like you said, this is a very exciting time for the Knicks and their fan base. But what do you think the key to their success has been so far?
Well, I think the first thing for the Knicks is that they have a superstar player in Carmelo Anthony, who's been really a very, very good. And that, you know, people know him, especially that follow basketball regularly, as someone who's kind of like an isolated player, you know, takes a lot of shots, controls the offense by himself, which, you know, in the other sports, in football, hockey, and baseball, there's a lot of variables that can keep people from really dominating a game in terms of being selfish, per se, maybe outside of football, because the wide receiver can kind of complain if he's not dominating the ball. But in basketball, you really need one. You can really have one good player, and that could lead you far. Of course, having more would help. But Melo has played on a level where he has meshed his natural instincts of being a scorer and being, you know, kind of, the main guy on the team with distributing the basketball and getting other players involved. I think for the most part, Jason Kidd, although he struggled recently, has really, you know, helped the team's offense move forward. Raymond Felton, who missed some time, and they really struggled without him. When he's been in the lineup, they've been very good. So there's a lot of different things that have really helped the Knicks be successful, but it really begins and ends with Carmelo Anthony and the effort he puts forth every game. He is an MVP candidate, and he deserves to be, and he has played like one throughout the year. And when push comes to shove, the Knicks are much better with Carmelo Anthony than they ever were before, or even the season when he's been hurt without him. He is the straw that stirs a drink, to steal a phrase from years ago.
Well, you know, I think you bring up a very interesting topic, because, you know, we have a lot of, a lot of the sports teams definitely intermingle and on Twitter. So I do inadvertently read a lot about the Knicks from Knicks fans. And perhaps I probably see, you know, not somebody who, you know, Knicks fan, it sounds almost like, you know, when Carlos Beltran was on the Mets, when it comes to Carmelo Anthony, it's like, this guy's not an MVP. This guy is the, you know, the straw that stirs the drink, as you say. But, you know, you say he's playing an MVP caliber level. How do you think he can sustain that level of play through the rest of the season and going into the playoffs?
I don't think there's any reason why he can't. I think the player that actually personifies Beltran more is actually Amari Stoudemire. Reason being is that he's coming off an injury, actually to his knee, which is the same thing that Beltran had to come back from in 2010. And a lot of people thought Amari would ruin the chemistry on this team, and he hasn't. He's actually been very good. So that's more the comparison I look at with Beltran for the Knicks. But to get back to the Melo point, there's no reason why he can't, other than injuries. He's had some injuries this year. He hurt his arm in the last game against Toronto, but he played the All-Star game and actually played very well. He would have been the MVP if the East had won the game. But he's had leg injuries. He's had finger issues. So there have been injuries that have kept him back. But other than that, there's nothing that he can't do on the basketball court that could keep him from being just the most successful guy out there right now, other than effort and injuries.
Now, in the East, who do you think, besides the Miami Heat, obviously, who do you think poses the biggest threat to the Knicks come playoff time?
I think that the Bulls, who have really dominated the Knicks this year, actually – the Knicks in the two games at Madison Square Garden against the Bulls did not even have a lead, not even a 2-0. They lost wire to wire in games where they fell behind by 20 points. And they're missing their best player, Derrick Rose, the point guard. So that is a team that could give them trouble. The Nets, although I see a lot of Knicks fans, and I don't want to believe it, but unfortunately it's true, the Nets can give the Knicks some trouble. They beat the Knicks twice this year, including once at the Garden. Obviously Miami, that's a given. And I would say the Pacers, who they're playing tonight, and actually the game just started, they also did give the Knicks a little bit of trouble because they play a very tough defensive style of basketball, and the Knicks are predicated on ball movement and really their offense. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, which one of those teams they eventually have to match up with. And on the low, on the bottom end of the bracket, you have the Celtics, who, you know, again, that's a rivalry, so that can be tough, and the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't think they match up with well either. So there's a lot of teams in the East that are going to give them trouble, but I'm also saying that now as a team that has struggled recently. And when the Knicks are at the top of their game, outside of Miami, I don't think anybody could beat them. So it depends on how well the Knicks are playing, more so than the other team.
Well, you bring up a very interesting topic, and I guess, like, you know, we're focusing so much on playoffs. I mean, it's almost a foregone conclusion that they will, in fact, be playing in the postseason. I mean, you and I are Mets fans. We know nothing is ever set in stone. But with the Knicks, you know, they're a sure thing. But trade deadline is tomorrow. Do they stand pat? Do they make a move? Where do you think, some blanks can be filled in?
Well, I don't think they're going to make any moves. If they do make any moves, it'll probably be a small one. They may trade away a guy like a Ronnie Brewer, maybe even a Kurt Thomas, if that's possible, to be honest. I think that they're pretty set with the team that they have. Mike Woodson, the head coach, has come out and said that he's happy with the team. They don't want to, he doesn't want Iman Shumpert to get traded. He's their young shooting guard that, you know, a lot of teams have been interested in, including the Phoenix Suns. But I truly believe the Knicks are going to stand pat. And I don't think it'd be a mistake that they do. They have a very talented team. And just once they get Rasheed Wallace and Marcus Camby back to help with their interior defense, I think they will be a lot better. I mean, amazingly enough, Rasheed Wallace, who's been retired for 2 years before coming back this year, actually was a bigger help than anyone could have ever expected. And I believe they are a better team with him on the floor than they have been since he's been out in the middle of December. They have struggled since he left because their interior defense has struggled. But in terms of making a trade, I don't see them doing anything right now, other than maybe a small, like, cash considerations type deal, which really won't, you know, alter the rotation positively or negatively.
Well, it seems to me like, you know, the Knicks have a pretty solid team. And that, you know, there are just things that they can do internally to stay on top of their game. I mean, what do you think? I mean, is there any kind of room for improvement? I mean, it sounds like you're comfortable with the way the team is. And if they make a small deal here or there tomorrow, then you're fine with that. But, I mean, it sounds like you're fine with the way the team is structured.
The talent that's on this team is good. It's what they do on the floor that's going to be the most important thing. Offensively, at the beginning of the year, they moved the ball well. They were shooting the three-point ball extremely well. And, you know, there's an old saying in basketball, you live by the three, you die by the three. And, you know, there have been games with Knicks, you know, they've beaten the Heat twice this year and they made 18 three-pointers. And there have been other games where they haven't made any threes and they've really struggled. So, you know, that offensively, it's ball movement and hitting their three-pointers. That's going to be key for them. Defensively, it's stopping, you know, point guards who like to drive the lane. You know, it's tough for these Knicks who don't have a big-time shot blocker, you know, to stop these guys in their perimeter defense with Felton and Iman Shumpert. Shumpert, remember, is coming off an ACL injury, you know, so it's been, you know, a problem for him getting back, you know, and staying healthy in this time and actually in playing well. He's still getting used to it. Their perimeter defense has got to improve. So in terms of the talent that's on the team, there's nothing that's really lacking deficiency. And they have a guy who is a former all-star caliber player in Amari Stoudemire and J.R. Smith, another guy who could have been an all-star this year coming off their bench. And they have good talent up and down the starting lineup with Shumpert, Chandler, Carmelo, Felton, and even Jason Kidd, who's playing at, you know, 39 years old. So in terms of the personnel, they're fine. It's what they do on the court and how they perform their duties both on offense and defense. It's going to take them as far as they want to go. You know, in the locker room, they have pictures of the championship trophy over their lockers. They want to win a title. They think they can. They think they can beat Miami. The question is whether or not they can actually prove it.
You know, it's funny that, you know, how you're talking about the Knicks. You know, they're a winning team, and yet you know, you go from covering this winning team and then we talk about the Mets. And I was just at, you know, so let's switch gears here and talk about the team that we initially bonded over, and that's the New York Mets. As you know, I've been a fan since I was 7 years old, which was like 100 years ago. And, oh, my gosh. Yeah, come to think of it. Yeah, it's been a really long time. But, you know, I was just on a podcast. And we talked about, you know, our concerns and, you know, questions about 2013. But I guess because my expectations are so low that I really think that they can only, you know, supersede what I think they can do. So going into 2013, what do you see from this Mets team?
It's kind of tough. And, you know, that's funny, you know. I told Max Romas, I even emailed this to you before the show, and I'll repeat it for the audience, you know, it's nice covering a winning team for once after 5 years of covering the Mets. I mean, ever since I've covered the Mets, they've either collapsed or they've stunk. So, you know, it's a whole different, you know, ball of wax. Coming into this year, it's about individuals. And I know that sounds strange because baseball is such a team sport, but Sandy Alderson went on the Mike Francesa show recently, and, he said something that, to put it into a metaphor, he wants to have a cake and eat it too, which is win in 90 games but have the guys progress. to me, I'll accept this season as a losing season if Travis Darnot, Wheeler, Harvey, you know, Ike Davis, and even to a lesser extent, David Wright, really come together and have big-time seasons or have seasons that show that their progression is leading towards something, and I'll accept that. This, for all intents and purposes, is a punt year. It's a year where they're not going to compete for playoff spots, but the seeds have been planted for success in the future. They have done a great job taking Carlos Beltran on last year's deal and R.A. Dickey in his one magical season and turning him into your starting catcher, starting pitcher, and maybe another starting pitcher down the line for this franchise. I mean, you can't quarrel with that part of it. Sure, they're not spending a lot of money, and that can be frustrating, but I think they're doing the right thing. And for 2013, it's all about the progression of the young players and how they gel. I think this team is actually closer than some people believe to being a contender because they have a lot of things going for them right now, including young pitching. I've said this in the past to other people. The Mets' goal is to never spend another big-time dollar like they did on Johan Santana on pitching because they want to have young pitchers under their control for the next 6-7 years and build it that way, very similar to the way the Oakland A's did it in the early 2000s behind Mulder, Zito, and Hudson. That's what the Mets are looking to build, and if the Mets can have that kind of regular season success like Oakland did those years, I think anyone would sign up for it. Of course, I'd rather have Yankee postseason success. That's a whole other ball of wax. The whole point is the Mets are looking towards the future, and I think the fans understand that. And although this year will be very frustrating at times, and when it's July and they're the only sport in town, it's going to be even more frustrating if they're not playing well. But we just got to look for 2013 is 1983. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. And, you know, it's kind of funny. You touched on the R.A. Dickey trade, which I think that it was one of those things that Mets fans just kind of had to swallow. And, I mean, unfortunately, R.A. Dickey, fan favorite, he will always be a fan favorite to most Mets fans. He had a career year. He won the Cy Young. He was a 20-game winner. You know, in despite of all of the shit that 2012 was, there were some real bright spots, you know, like Johan Santana's no-hitter and R.A. Dickey. And now we're looking to the future. And I think you hit the nail on the head. And there's something interesting about Mets history that if you look at their championship years, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, then the 1980s, and even 1969, you know, the catchers, it's very curious when you look at the catching history of this team. There's been such a rich pitching history. You know, you've got your Seavers and Kuzmans and Doc and everyone else. But then you have the catchers, and it's Grody, Carter, and Piazza. And what's interesting is that they were veterans who made their marks on other teams before coming to the Mets and then win a championship. So I think, what I'm really curious about is to see what a coveted prospect was. I mean, I don't know if you heard, I mean, you probably did hear Sandy Alderson's story about how when he had another team that was he was courting for R.A. Dickey, he wanted two players. I believe it was Pittsburgh, but I could be wrong. He wanted two players. They said no. He orchestrated the trade for Darnot. That same team calls him back and offers the player straight up for Darnot, and he said no. So, I mean, it just goes to show that, you know, that other teams are, you know, it's not even a backhanded compliment to the Mets. It's really a move to their future. And I'm just excited about the future as you seem to be as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you can't even, I mean, even Laduca, who in 2006 was a guy who made his mark on the Dodgers and to a lesser extent the Marlins, and he was, a better catcher than some of the guys that have come through the Mets, even recently or in the past. That's a good point. I never even thought of it that way, the success of the catchers amongst the championship teams. I think the other thing is that these championship teams the Mets have had, 69, 73, 86, and, 99/2000, you know, those teams had to be built for a long time. It took them 7 years to get to 69, You know, it took them a few years to get to 73, but that's kind of all connected together. Same way 86 and 88 are. But it took them 13 years to get back to the pinnacle between 73 and 86, including the really, really bad years, 79 and 80. Again, there was the early 90s, which really were bad, and of course eventually led to the process that became the late 90s match, early 2000s team. And then again, there was the Art Howe years you had to endure. Met fans have endured through such pain more often than there has been success. That all pays off in the end with appearances either in the NLCS or the World Series or, of course, winning it all. So this is just another stretch of those down years, and it's kind of like a roller coaster. They were up, in my lifetime as a fan, they were up in 99, 2000. They were down between 02 and 04. They were up again from 05 through September of 2007. They've been down ever since September of 07. And eventually they're going to come back up. And I think 2014 and 2015 is going to be that time.
I'm really jonesed about the future. And I actually, you hit on another topic. We talked about Carlos Beltran earlier, and then you brought up Johan Santana's contract. And this is technically Santana's walk year. And I can't help but think, from the writer and the sappy sentimental baseball part of me that is just like, oh gosh, Johan Santana came with, such promise, and there was such enthusiasm behind it. Now we're just kind of hoping that he has a bounce back year so he can be traded at the deadline. So what do you think, we could expect from someone like him going into 2013?
Well, I think the best case scenario is you get the same kind of first half that he had last year up through, except that it doesn't end in June with that performance. I mean, people forget, people kind of point to the no-hitter, and that was like the turning point. Late in June, he went to Dodger Stadium on a Saturday night on national television and shut them down. And he dominated the Dodgers for 8 shutout innings. So it wasn't as if, like, right after the no-hitter, he couldn't pitch again. It was really after that Dodger game where the struggles would happen, and he points more to the injury in Chicago where he twisted his ankle that really, changed everything. So I think for the Mets, they have to expect, the hope that Santana stays healthy, has a good first half, and then they can move him to a contender, which I think would be, a good thing for Santana. It would be the right thing for the Mets to do for him as a person because of what he has meant to the team. And I will say this, I've never seen a guy who's been paid so much money and he's played for the team for 7 years, and has only finished one full season with the team. 08 was the only time he finished the year with them, and he has not looked at it in a negative light. Most people would complain that a guy who really has the equivalent of maybe 3 full seasons or 4 out of 7, would have been a complete bust, but it's been anything but. Everyone's always been behind him, and I think that's one of the great things about Santana. He's transcended negativity from the fan base because of how he's performed on the field when he's been out there. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think a lot of players would almost have to look up to, because that's something you may never see again.
That is a really interesting point, and I'm glad that you brought it up. Before the no-hitter, before June 1st, 2012 ever happened, I think what really stood out for Mets fans and Johan Santana was his last game in 2008, the last Saturday game at Shea Stadium, where he cornered Jerry Manuel and said, "I'm pitching today." He went out on short rest. He pitched a complete game, and he basically said, "Do not put the bullpen in to close this game. This is my game to finish." And that was something I think Mets fans identified with, because if you look back to 2007 and how they just kind of collapsed and then just ran into their corners and didn't say anything, and it was just awful. I mean, that's some post-traumatic Mets disorder that you have going on there. But then you go into 2008, and even the way that they ended, and it was sad to lose Shea Stadium, that's the game that I think Mets fans look to with Johan Santana, even before the no-hitter. Because, if you think about it, the no-hitter was almost a footnote in 2012. If you look at everything that R.A. Dickey did, he had 2 one-hitters in a row, and then he won the Cy Young, and he won 20 games. The knuckleball, he was like a multimedia star. And it was almost like, oh, yeah, and by the way, Johan Santana pitched the first no-hitter in Mets history. It was almost like a footnote. But like you said, you know, you look back to someone like Carlos Beltran, and I was incredibly hard on Beltran when he first came to the Mets, and then I ended up loving him. But he did, like you said, he didn't really transcend the negativity, and that was unfortunate. He couldn't wait to get out of New York, I felt. But I think it was really bittersweet with Johan, so I really applaud you for bringing that up. Well, we're closing in on a half an hour. Now, let's take a step back. Do you have any... I mean, I don't want you to, you know, predict any records, but do you have any kind of, what are you most excited about going into 2013?
Well, I think from the Mets, my prediction would be somewhere, I think if everything breaks right, they can win 85 games. I'm talking about everything, magical year. We're talking Baltimore Orioles type luck, 85 wins at best. I think realistically, if they were to win between 75 and 79 games, I think the Mets fan would have to be ecstatic. If they lose anything less than 70 games, I think Kerry Collins is gone. I think it's a nightmare kind of season, and I think that would put a lot of pressure on 2014 being successful. If 2013, again, is one of those years, where, you know, again, they show improvement from last year to this year and improve by 5-6 wins and get to 80, 79 wins, then there's going to be a lot of goodwill. If this team actually gets worse, even if the players that I mentioned do have good years and show promise, it could be an interesting offseason because they may be changing managers. And again, there can be pressure. Fred Wilcox says they're free and clear of their debt, which some people have said is not true. And, you know, we're going to find out because they have no excuse not to spend money and improve the team if necessary starting next offseason.
And that's a wrap. So, Matt, tell us where we can find you.
Well, you can find me on theknicksblog.com. I'll be covering the end of the game tonight against Indiana and throughout the season doing the pre- and post-games and doing some other more behind-the-scenes stuff that you can read about the pre- and post of every Knick game through the end of the season and into the playoffs. And then, of course, during baseball season, catch me at dailyfash.net and also on Twitter at dailyfash.
Matt, great guests as always. Thank you for coming on, and I look forward to starting baseball season with you. And go Rangers!
Oh yeah, absolutely. Go Rangers. Go Knicks, Jets, whatever team you root for. I hope they do well, except the Yankees and the Mets. And it's been great being on the show, and can't wait to talk to you again during the season.
All right, Matt. Take care.
Bye bye.
That was Matt Falkenberry from the Daily Stash and SNY's Knicks blog. I'm the Coop. You were listening to the Gal for All Seasons podcast here on Block Talk Radio on the NDB Media Sports Channel. I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. And again, we hope to have Jake's segment on next week. He just adds a certain something to the chemistry of the show, and I look forward to having him back. Looking to get some good guests on next week. I mean, as I mentioned, Go Rangers at the end of that segment with Matt. Let's just say I see a little bit of rust on some of the players, and can the cylinders click at all times? And I'm talking about the forwards. If it's not Marian Gaborik, then it's Brad Richards, and then it's Rick Nash being benched for no good reason. What is going on? We need to win these games. That's about it in a nutshell. Otherwise, I'm just happy as a clam and looking forward to start a baseball season. I'm not looking forward to the World Baseball Classic. I think it's a ginormous waste of time. And that about wraps it up. I'm the Coop, Taryn Cooper. Thank you for listening. You can read my rants at galforallseasons.com. You can find me on Twitter at Coops22, COOPZ22. And that's all. It is Wednesday, February 20th, Gal for All Seasons, Blog Talk Radio, NDB Media Sports. Thanks for listening. See you next week.